Samaya peta kila chakler bake. Dante drita kridana ke nuvartini. Chakru kripam yajapi tul yadarshana. Shushru shamane munayo putvasini. Te maya peta kila chapaler bake.
Te maya peta kila chapaler bake.
Dante dita kridana ke nuvartini.
Dante dita kridana ke nuvartini.
Chakru kripam yajapi tulyadarshana.
Chakru kripam yajapi tulyadarshana.
Shushu shamane munayo pavashini. I'll read the synonyms. Te, they, mayi, unto me, apeta, not having undergone, akila, all kinds of, chapale, proclivities. Arbake, unto a boy, dante, having controlled the senses, adrita, pridhantake, without being accustomed to sporting habits, anuvartani, obedient, chakru, did bestow, kripam, causeless mercy, yajapi, although, Tulyadarshana, impartial by nature, Shushru Shamane, unto the faithful, Munaya, the Muni followers of the Vedanta, Alphabashini, one who does not speak more than required. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Although they were impartial by nature, those followers of the Vedanta blessed me with their causeless mercy. As far as I was concerned, I was self-controlled and had no attachment for sports, even though I was a boy. In addition, I was not naughty, and I did not speak more than required. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, all the Vedas are searching after me. Lord Sri Chaitanya says that in the Vedas, the subject matters are only three, namely, to establish the relation of the living entities with the personality of Godhead, to perform the relative duties in devotional service and thus achieve the ultimate goal back to Godhead. To perform relative duties in devotional service and thus achieve the ultimate goal back to Godhead. As such, Vedanta Vadis, or the followers of Vedanta, indicate the pure devotees of the personality of Godhead. Such Vedanta Vadis, or the Bhakti Vedantas, are impartial in distributing transcendental knowledge of devotional service. To them, no one is an enemy or friend, and no one is educated or uneducated. No one is especially favorable, and no one is unfavorable. The Bhaktivedantas see that the people in general are wasting time in false, sensuous things. Their business is to get the ignorant mass of people to reestablish the lost relationship with the personality of Godhead. By such endeavor, even the most forgotten soul is roused up to the sense of spiritual life. And thus, being initiated by the Bhaktivedantas, the people in general gradually progress on the path of transcendental realization. So the Vedanta Vadis initiated the boy even before he became self-controlled and detached from childish sporting, etc. But before the initiation, he, the boy, became more and more advanced in discipline, which is very essential for one who wishes to make progress in the line. In the system of Varnashram Dharma, which is the beginning of actual human life, small boys, after 5 years of age, are sent to become brahmachari at the guru's ashram, where there are things that are systematically taught to boys, be they king's sons or sons of ordinary citizens. The training was compulsory not only to create good citizens of the state, but also to prepare each boy's future life for spiritual realization. The irresponsible life of sense enjoyment was unknown to the children, the followers of the Varnashram system. The boy was even injected with spiritual acumen before being placed by the father in the womb of the mother, both the father and mother responsible for the boy's success and being liberated from material bondage. That is the process of successful family planning. It is to beget children for complete perfection, without being self-controlled, without being disciplined, and without being fully obedient. No one can become successful in following the instructions of the spiritual master, and without doing so, no one is able to go back to Godhead. Om Jnana Karandasya Gananjana Svakaya Chaksurun Mitamena Tasmai Shri Kadena Mahana Panchakopa Trubhischa Kripa Sindhavyevacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha.
I just want to say one thing that our YouTube is on live stream. If you have any question after Prabhu finish, you can type it on the chat room and I can read it to him, or you can text to 352-221-0041.
Okay, so we have a way of getting questions, so I'll try to leave a little time for that. This verse is, in purport, is very nice because it talks about the ideal spiritual master and also the ideal guru. In other words, what are the qualities of both the spiritual preceptor and one who is taking those instructions? Now, Prabhupada refers to these great souls that Narada Muni encountered as Bhaktivedantas or Vedantas. In the previous verse, the word Vedavadanam was used to describe them, which means a follower of Vedanta. Now, what is a follower of Vedanta? Srila Prabhupada actually gives the characteristics of one who is a perfect follower of the Vedas, and he describes the Vedantist in three ways. It's right here in the purport. Prabhupada describes what these great souls speak of, what is their subject matter. He talks about what are their qualities and characteristics personally, and then what their activities are in serving Krishna. So we'll start with what do they speak about? What is the activity of these great souls in terms of their speech? Now, Prabhupada begins the purport by saying that all true spiritual knowledge is comprised of three subject matters. And these are the subject matters that a pure devotee of the Lord speaks about and we see our scriptures contain. In fact, all spiritual knowledge is comprised of these subjects, and it's been explained by Srila Prabhupada that all of the scriptures, the different ones, fit into these categories in some way. So Prabhupada said that those three purposes or three subject matters are to establish the relationship of living entity with the personality of Godhead, and of course that is also called sambandha, to perform the relative duties in devotional service, known as abhideya, and thus to achieve the ultimate goal back to Godhead, which is prayojan. So Prabhupada mentions Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's actually in Adi 7 that he discusses this. Now, all the Vedic verses describe three subject matters. So first of all, we have sambandha, which is one's relationship with the Supreme. It's that connection. And that connection means understanding spiritual knowledge, because you can't really connect with the Lord unless you know who he is, what he does. You have to understand so many things about spiritual life and this material world. So we have examples of our scriptures often discuss this, Bhagavad Gita particularly. Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada has explained in the introduction, there are five subject matters of Bhagavad Gita, five topics. Ishvara, who is the supreme controller of Krishna, Jiva, the living entity, the individual spirit soul, Prakriti, or the material energy, Kala, time, and Karma, activity. So these are all part of sambandha. These comprise knowing our relationship with Krishna, which means knowing ourselves, knowing Krishna, knowing its material world, knowing how the time factor plays in, and how we create karma, and how we become free from karma. All of these things are in Bhagavad Gita, and of course many other scriptures, Bhagavatam, and so many talk about our relationship with Krishna and the nature of both material and the spiritual worlds. The next subject is abhideya. And abhideya means activity in devotional service. It's like a practical application. We can think of sadhana bhakti, the nine processes of devotional service, the practice of sadhana. This is abhideya. And we see particularly, there are certain, especially some of the Goswami literature, like Nectar Devotion, Nectar Instruction, cover these matters very thoroughly. Also, you'll find it in Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, to some degree in Bhagavad Gita. Basically, it's there throughout. However, once one knows who Krishna is, then what does one do? What is the practices of devotional service If you know someone, the Krishna Supreme Personality of Godhead, what naturally follows? Then if he is the Lord of everything, how do I serve him? What do I do to perfect myself, become a perfect servant and follower of Krishna? So once one does that, as one becomes perfected in devotional service, it brings us to a prayojana. This is the perfection, or pure unalloyed devotional service. So we may not be at that stage, but we certainly learn about that. And our scriptures tell us where we're headed. If you're on a trip, you're on a path, you're on a road, you want to know where you're headed. There's no point saying, well, I'm doing it perfectly. I'm driving the car perfectly. I'm following the speed limit. I'm following all the rules and regulations, but I have no idea where I'm going. That wouldn't make any sense. So we need to know the goal. And that goal is pure devotional service. Now, of course, we can see the results of pure devotional service in many of our scriptures, particularly Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the highest, most elevated, not only discussion of Krishna in a sort of an abstract or theoretical way, but in a very personal way that explains his pastimes, particularly the 10th canto. We have all the pastimes of Krishna. And one can really relish these fully and enter into these when one reaches the stage of prayojana, or perfection. But also other things, nectar devotion, Chaitanya Charitamrita, many of the Puranas talk about different pastimes of Krishna and his incarnations. All of these things are throughout our scriptures. And one thing we might note is that the perfect scripture that describes all three of these, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, is Srimad Bhagavatam. All are there together. Spiritual knowledge is there. Lessons in devotional service, examples of great devotees. In fact, we even have chapters like Narada Muni's instructions on this, or to Grihasthas, or whatever. There are whole chapters which are instructions about how to serve. And, of course, all the pastimes of Krishna are there. And one thing that I always found really interesting about the Srimad Bhagavatam, how these things are interwoven. Like you'll be going along into some pastime and of Krishna or Balaram or whoever, and the personality sort of stops in the middle, pauses, and gives 10 or 12 verses of philosophical instruction. And you'll hear this. Remember that there was one pastime, I forget which one it was, a Balaram. And usually we think of Balaram just doing these great heroic pastimes. And Balaram stops, and he talks about the nature of the soul, and he talks about, you know, so many things right in the middle. I forget which one it is. Different ones like that. You'll find it, you know, like occasionally someone like Rukmini or the gopis will pause in their activities, and they'll reflect upon spiritual ideas and philosophy. Now, sometimes we get some of the greatest philosophy from some of these seemingly simple residents of Vrindavan. They'll just kind of like break from that or pause and talk about the highest philosophy. Then they go right back, of course, to their pastime with Krishna. So Bhagavatam is amazing. It's so interesting like this, the way that this is all interwoven in such a way that's engaging and attractive to the conditioned souls. And this is what these great devotees present. This is what Srila Prabhupada presented to us. Srila Prabhupada presented, and he spoke, most of his classes are fairly basic, Sambandha level, and also Abhideya, how we advance in Krishna consciousness, how we serve Krishna, hearing and chanting, all of the processes. But then Prabhupada in 1970 gave us Krishna book. He gave us in the very beginning, that's before I even joined, when we were total neophytes, he gave us the highest pastimes of Krishna. So this is... Prabhupada is called Bhaktivedanta Swami. And I think it's a wonderful title that he was given. Wonderful title, because Bhaktivedanta means one who knows, but bhakti, one who knows devotional service to the Lord. So Prabhupada is a Bhaktivedanta, and these great souls that Narada Muni encountered during the rainy season when they stayed wherever his mother was serving, they are Bhaktivedantas, Vedantas. They know this real purpose of the Vedas. So, and it's also interesting that there's a sequence to this knowledge. Now, I just said Prabhupada gave us, you know, a Krishna book even before we had perfected the other stages. But generally, when we are approaching new people, we present Krishna consciousness in a sequence. We first want people to understand basic knowledge. We want them to understand a little bit about who Krishna is before we start talking about some esoteric pastime. In fact, we kind of avoid the esoteric pastimes for the most part, unless someone is fairly very advanced, and most of us are not at that stage. So we present Krishna consciousness systematically as people can understand it. But sometimes we engage people in service, which is abhideya, before they understand anything about their philosophy. Because sometimes, you know, we give people prasada. We engage them in hearing when you're out on sankirtan, when you're chanting Hare Krishna. And we engage them in chanting. Sometimes you'll see when the devotees are chanting, like at Rath Yatra, they're out on the beach, and people come out there who are just out there swimming. And they come out and they somehow join the sankirtan party, and they'll begin, some of them will be chanting and dancing along with us. They have no knowledge of philosophy, no understanding, but they're being engaged. And that's good because that's very purifying for them. And it is what we call agata sukriti. It's unknown, unseen benefit. And that benefit, Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur says, through agata sukriti, one develops faith. Now, they have no faith to begin with, but they do some service, like chanting or appreciating devotees, taking prasadam. And somehow or another, some faith develops. So at some time, later this lifetime, very soon, maybe even next lifetime, they encounter the devotees and then they'll be able to hear. And they're able to start. Then they can go into the real process of sambandha, of attaching, of attachment to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Okay. So this is what the pure devotees speak of. But Prabhupada then also talks about the qualities and characteristics of pure devotees. And the word that's used here in this verse is tulya darshana. This means basically, Prabhupada translates tulya darshana as impartial. But I could, literally you could say it means equal vision. Darshana, vision, and tulya. I looked up tulya, and most places that it's presented, Prabhupada is translated as equal. There's different ways tulya is used. So tulya darshana is basically equal vision. Very similar to what in the Bhagavad Gita, Pandita Samadarshanaha, equal vision. The Pandit, the great soul, has equal vision. And that means that one's, and Prabhupada is describing, this means one does not see friend or enemy, one who's favorable or unfavorable, one who's educated or uneducated. Does not make distinctions. Now what does that mean? Does that mean that we have no idea whether somebody's favorable or not? No, it's not that we're oblivious to these things. It's that we disregard them. And the great devotees, the pure devotees like Śrīla Prabhupāda, equally show mercy to everyone to give them Krishna consciousness. Just like Śrīla Prabhupāda would very much like to meet with very famous people, educated people, professors, but he also preached in the Bowery of New York with very low-class people, or people who were at least performing low-class habits, even though they really weren't low-class, as we... They later became very nice devotees. But I remember even the one story where this intoxicated street person, we just called them bums, that's probably not politically correct. But anyway, this intoxicated street person came in, wandered in, staggered into the storefront there, 26th Second Avenue, and he had a roll of toilet paper, and he put it there, I don't know if it was on the Vyasan or the altar, and anyway, and he gave it to them and kind of like nodded and walked out. And Prabhupada said, just see, his devotional service has begun. So this was the lowest class person that Prabhupada accepted that service from. And this is the nature of these great souls. They simply want to engage people in Krishna consciousness. And one of the best examples we have from our history, from our Vaishnava Acharyas, are the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Shad Goswamis. And of course, in the very famous song to the six Goswamis, one of the verses in there says they were popular with both the gentle and the ruffians because they were not envious of anyone. I always remember this from years back. I thought that always struck me, like the gentle and the ruffians. It's an interesting way to talk about high-class people or low-class people. It doesn't matter. And is it why? Because they're not envious of anyone. In other words, they just want to help. They want to serve. He says, whatever they do, they are all pleasing to everyone. So the devotee, and we saw this with the example of Srila Prabhupada, he made friends with all kinds of people, and he knew how to treat people. Sometimes he chastised people, and they accepted it, but he knew when not to do that. He knew when you had to offer the rose and when you had to offer the stick and offer the carrot, we might say. And, you know, sometimes I remember one pastime, he was walking out in Los Angeles in a nice neighborhood with the devotees on his morning walk, and, you know, some lady came and was out in her house, in her yard, and Prabhupada didn't preach to her, he didn't say, he just said, good morning, with a big smile, and she says, good morning. You know, in other words, be pleasing to everyone so people have a favorable impression. If we can't do anything else, if we're in a position where we can't really preach strongly to people, at least leave a favorable impression. And Prabhupada would always do that. You know, and even sometimes when he was a little bit stronger or would chastise people, he would do it in such a way that they usually accepted it. They almost liked it. They enjoyed it. You know, or he would convince them. But Prabhupada said very carefully, he says, I'm an old man and I can speak like this. You cannot. In other words, we would probably do it wrong and insult the person, offend them, and they would leave. So unless you have Prabhupada's expertise, be very careful in that and try to be pleasing to people. I'm going to take a couple minutes and read something which I don't think I've read this for a long time in class. So this is from the Bhakti Ratnakara by Narahari Das. And this is about Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami was one of the most wonderful devotees ever in the history of Vaishnavism. Of course, they all are. I could say that about anybody. But Sanatan Goswami truly was. He was the leader of Goswamis, the elder brother of Rupa Goswami, the uncle of Jiva Goswami, respected by everyone. But he also had a kind and gentle nature that made him beloved by all of the people in the area. So I'm just going to read this. This is just so nice. It says, after staying in one town, when Sanatana would go to another town, the people would follow behind him. Whether a young boy or an old man, whoever it was, all would lose their patience and cry as the Goswami would leave. Sanatana Goswami himself would shed tears as he solaced them and sent them back to their own homes. Only after they'd all stopped crying and returned to their homes would Sanatana leave for the next village. As Sanatana approached the next village, the people would watch him coming from the distance. Whether young or old, man or woman, everyone say, here is Sanatana. The Vrajabasis displayed wonderful affection. The villagers could not sit in one place, but went to welcome Sanatana, just as a poor man experiences unlimited happiness if he suddenly obtains a valuable jewel. So the Vrajabasis felt unlimited happiness by seeing Sanatana. The old and the very old men and women all treated Sanatana as their own son. Whoever came rushing to welcome him would embrace him, take his hand, and lead him along. The villagers would jubilantly have him sit under a sacred tree, and everyone would sit around him. They would all bring yogurt, butter, and milk from their homes from Sanatana. After he finished eating, they would all sit happily with him. Now, this next part talks about how he related to them. And it's kind of interesting, because you'd think how he would be discoursing, you know, on the Bhagavatam. It's not really what he did. Of course, these are Brajavasis, you know, these are all residents of Vrindavan, and they all understand Krishna, you know. But look how he, so assuming they're devotees, look how he interacted with these devotees. Sanatana affectionately inquired from each person about their well-being. He inquired about how many children, daughters, and sons they had, whether they were married, where they were married, what were their names, what was their education. He asked how many cows and bulls one had, how their agriculture was, how much grains they produced, and what was their daily routine. He also asked them how their health was and what was the state of their mind. So I think sometimes we think, well, these things are mundane and, you know, we shouldn't worry about it. But no, when we're dealing with devotees, we're concerned about them. We're concerned about their welfare. That means everything. And so obviously right now we're very concerned about devotees' health. You know, and so this is natural. This isn't material, it's not mundane. Of course we understand the spiritual reality and the spiritual state is most important. That doesn't mean that we neglect anything. The devotee understands everything coming from Krishna, both material and spiritual energy, and always wishes the welfare and the happiness and the health for other devotees. Going back, hearing these inquiries, everyone felt happy. Gradually, each one of them answered his questions. When Sanatana heard someone's distress, he also felt distress. By Sanatana's solace, they felt relief from their distressed condition. In this way, they passed the whole night. By seeing others happy, Sanatana would also become happy. Reminds us of Prahlad Maharaj, right? As described previously, when he would leave the village, everyone would cry in agitation. Who can describe the affectionate dealings of Sanatana Goswami? He would solace everyone in various ways. The people would follow Sanat Goswami for some distance until he would give them their own, give them his vow and make them return to their homes, the vow that he would return. So these are the wonderful qualities of one of the greatest devotees, the greatest Vaishnavas in our line, one of our preceptors, our acharyas. Our acharyas show us how to deal with people, how to actually give Krishna's love, Krishna's kindness, Krishna's mercy and compassion to others. So the pure devotee is a, Prabhupada said, was a transparent via media. In other words, Krishna comes through them. Not only Krishna's words, but Krishna's qualities. So this is what we see in these Bhaktivedantas. And these qualities of great devotees are mentioned throughout the scriptures. A couple of verses from Bhagavad Gita, which we know. Bhagavad Gita 5:7, one who works in devotion, who is a pure soul, then who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone, and everyone is dear to him. Bhagavad Gita 5:29 describes Krishna as Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, the well-wisher of all living beings. And 5:18, the humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle Brahman, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. So these are some of the qualities, examples from our scriptures, the same qualities being described by Srila Prabhupada's purport. And finally, from 4:647, Srila Prabhupada's purport says, the Vaishnava is described as Paradukaduki, because although he is never distressed in any condition of life, he's distressed to see others in a distressed condition. Example, of course, of Sanatana Goswami. And so when we see the distress of others, we become distressed. We try not to be distressed so much for ourselves. We try to depend upon Krishna, faith in Krishna. Devotee thinks whatever's happening to me is happening by Krishna's will or by my own karma, my own offenses, whatever. But I don't think that about others. I don't think if I see the distress in another person, oh, well, that's his karma. No, this is not Vaishnava. Vaishnava is distressed by seeing the distress in others and tries to relieve them. Now, that doesn't mean just materially, but spiritually as well. So we want to give Krishna consciousness. But the thing that we learn about giving Krishna consciousness to others is that you have to relate first, sometimes, to the position of the person. That's called empathy. You have some empathy for how they are feeling, what they're experiencing. Then you can gently inject Krishna consciousness. And that's exactly what Sanatana Goswami did, and we saw Srila Prabhupada do it so many times. So this quality of mercy and compassion in the great devotees leads to their activities. And Prabhupada says in the purport, I'll read it again, what is the activity of the Bhaktivedantas? Their business is to get the ignorant mass of people to reestablish their lost relationship with the personality of Godhead. By such endeavor, even the most forgotten soul is roused up to the sense of spiritual life. And thus being initiated by the Bhaktivedantas, the people in general gradually progress on the path of transcendental realization. So, Krishna is most merciful to all conditioned souls, so his devotees also, having some of those qualities and wanting to please the Lord, also exhibit those qualities of mercy. It says in the Bhagavad Gita 16:2, the different qualities, the divine qualities of devotees, one of them is Daya Bhuteshu, mercy towards all living beings. So Krishna has, of course, his different features. And in his, what we call his Audarya pastimes, manifested by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he shows his magnanimous, merciful nature. So Lord Chaitanya is the most merciful. He's called the Maho Mahavaranaya Krishna Prema Vridayate, because he's given us this easy process of self-realization but the highest, deepest philosophy. And he inaugurates the Sankirtan movement to deliver all of the jivas in this Kali Yuga. So that primary process, of course, that Lord Chaitanya gives us is the chanting of the holy name. And that chanting allows us to actually, going back to our original idea of Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana, those things are experienced through the process of chanting, because it allows us to understand Krishna, gives us realization. It helps us become purified. We all know that we're chanting 16 rounds every day, primarily to purify the heart. That's the process of advancing. And it also helps us to experience a taste of bliss my relationship to Krishna. So we may not see Krishna face to face, as a great pure devotee might, but we sometimes see Krishna in his holy name. You know, we feel a little happiness, a little bliss, a little expansion. Yes, Krishna's in his holy name. So in this way, we advance. So Lord Chaitanya engages us in the pastime of saving the conditioned souls. He said, there are so many, what can I do? There is so much to do. There's so many conditioned souls. I can't possibly give out the fruit spirit to everyone. So he said, yes, everyone to take this up. Everyone to become engaged in this process of giving Krishna consciousness to others. So his devotees want to fulfill his merciful desire. We assist the Lord. Actually, we assist the Lord's devotee. The great devotees are assisting Lord Chaitanya and his pastime of giving Krishna consciousness. And if we're fortunate, we can perhaps give a little assistance to those great devotees like Srila Prabhupada. And that's our mission, following the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada brought the chanting of the holy name to every town and village, fulfilling Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. So that's basically what we do. That is our mission, to try to follow in the footsteps of the Bhaktivedantas, our Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the great souls and the devotees, to try to help give Krishna consciousness to others. So that's the nature of the perfect Vedantas, the perfect spiritual master. And we also see here the example of the perfect disciple.
Narada Muni
was a small boy, 5 years old. It's described that he was well-behaved, he was sense-controlled and serious. Kind of unusual. Usually a five-year-old's are kind of, even if they're really nice boys, they have a lot of energy and rambunctious and like to play and do sports. He apparently didn't. He was extremely serious, obviously very brahminical. And because of that, he was able to hear the instruction, spiritual instruction. And he was able to take to Krishna consciousness, become initiated by them. We'll hear later how that happened. We're taking prasadam, taking minutes, etc. But that's the next verse. But he gives us this example, and Prabhupada describes fairly extensively in his purport. He talks a lot about the importance of training children from an early age to take up Krishna consciousness. The importance of Gurukul, of children learning specifically about spiritual life. Not just material subject matter, but spiritual subject matter. And of course, very famous verse and not a very nice purport explains this from the 7th canto, 6th chapter, verse 1, Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad says, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagement. And of course, he showed that example how when he was in his Gurukula with his demoniac teachers, he tried to instruct all of his schoolmates and get them to chant Hare Krishna. And they all became converted to Krishna consciousness through his efforts at 5 years old. Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, the whole purpose of Vedic civilization and of reading the Vedas is to attain the perfect stage of devotional service and the human form of life. According to the Vedic system, therefore, from the very beginning of life, the Brahmacharya system is introduced from one's very childhood, from the age of 5, that one can practice modifying one's human activity as to engage perfectly in devotional service. Anyway, it's a long purport. I won't read it. He says, in all schools, colleges, universities, and at home, all children, youth, should be taught to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, so much could be said about the Gurukula system and how young children should be trained, but looking a little bit at the larger picture, we see that Krishna consciousness is an educational movement. ISKCON is an educational society. Sometimes we think, well, it's a religious society or a spiritual society, but Prabhupada often talked about education. He talked about the importance of education, and that was really what we did. We educated. He didn't say so much we preached to people, we converted people. He said we educate people. This is from The Quest of Enlightenment, which I think is a synopsis of some of Srila Prabhupada's lectures. Prabhupada said, in this Krishna consciousness movement, we are giving people a chance to understand the problems of life and how to solve them. It is not a sectarian movement, a so-called religious movement. It is an educational and cultural movement. So Prabhupada saw this as broader than teaching a religion. Talk about educating so people understood what life is all about, all aspects of life, the purpose of life, and a cultural movement, which is the Abhideya, which is how to enact, how to take up Krishna consciousness, and not just through one's own personal practice, but how it's spread throughout the whole society and culture. So there are really two focuses we might think about education or movement. The first is, of course, educating the whole world, all conditioned souls, how to give this Krishna conscious knowledge to everyone, and that is, of course, why Srila Prabhupada translated and wrote all these books with their purports. By distributing millions and hundreds of millions of books, which devotees have done so far, we are giving this education in mass to all the people of the world. And the second emphasis, of course, is to educate our own devotees, our young, not only our young students, but all of our devotees. And that's also very important, that education of Krishna consciousness continues within our own society. So as far as the greater society, Srila Prabhupada, of course, wanted to preach to everyone. We talked about it, wouldn't matter whether the bum in the street or whoever. But he liked to focus on students and professors a lot. He always saw that as ripe ground for preaching. And he was right. Many, many of our devotees were young when we all joined. Many of us, I was a college student. Many of us were college students when we met the devotees and we became Krishna conscious. And Prabhupada knew that those were the ripe fruits to come to this Krishna conscious movement. And he also knew that we needed to first create Brahmins. That was his point. We have to first educate people as Brahmins. That means people who know the philosophy and can help give this philosophy to others. So that was the first goal of Srila Prabhupada. And interesting, and of course he very much liked to talk with professors and debate with professors in different ways. And he also wanted to make sure that the intelligent class of people had this Vedic literature. Remember when I was working for the BBT, the department I ran, we had different aspects, like we distributed sent out the back to Godheads, and we did mail order and different things. But one of our departments was, we called the library party. A lot of people will probably remember this, but what they did, the devotees went out and they met with librarians and professors, and they sold them standing orders. In other words, at that time, Prabhupada only translated through maybe third, fourth canto, I don't remember, depends on what year you're talking about. And they committed to taking all of the Bhagavatams as they were translated and printed. And so they would. So what we would do, our job, back in the order department, was to fulfill these. We knew that University of Connecticut Library was due to get the next two volumes, so things like that. And the library party devotees would go out and get these orders. I think some of our local devotees were involved in this. As I remember, Kalakanta was on the library party, and I think Shesha was for a while, too. You know, they were educated, intelligent devotees, and they were able to speak, you know, with these professors nicely and get them to take the books. So this is the way that Prabhupada thought about how to get this Krishna consciousness to everyone. And so he knew there was a need for organized training. In other words, not just random. Okay, in the beginning, yes, stand on a street, sit under the tree in Pompton Square, chant Hare Krishna, devotees come. But after he got a few devotees, Prabhupada put his great, incredible management acumen to work and how to organize and spread Krishna consciousness. I've always remember this point so well, because in my initiation letter, my letter that Srila Prabhupada sent to us when we took initiation, this was, I think, 73, he said, 72 or 73, he said, you are all intelligent boys and girls, he's very kind. Therefore, my request to you is you study the science of Krishna consciousness and solve all the problems of the world by systematic propaganda as far as you're able to do it. Systematic propaganda. That means, you know, propaganda, we use this word, sometimes it has a negative connotation. By propaganda, probably meant our preaching, our outreach work. It meant, you know, getting out the books, the literature, like that. Systematically, though, through strategic planning, through figuring out, using our intelligence, best ways to do this. And that was his educational focus. And then internally, it was very important to Prabhupada that we educate our children and devotees. Srila Prabhupada said in a letter to Nandarani, Gurukula is our most important project. If the children are given a Krishna conscious education from very early childhood, then there is great hope for the future of the world. So Prabhupada always emphasized this. It was a very important project to him, and he was always thinking about the children and Gurukula. I was in Dallas for a little while at our first Gurukula, and as many people know, our early Gurukulas had many problems. There were many difficulties, and sometimes the children were not treated as they should have been. I could say so much more about this, but I will not here in the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Suffice it to say, is because the devotees were whatever. Young, didn't know, didn't have knowledge, didn't have experience, didn't really know but they did not fulfill what Srila Prabhupada wanted. What Srila Prabhupada wanted was that children would be taught with love and kindness, and they'd be educated in Krishna consciousness. And he said the best way to do this by example is that children do what we do. So we chant Hare Krishna and they'll chant Hare Krishna. He says you don't need to force. It's natural. And you see this. We see young children, they come into the temple and they're chanting and dancing, and they enjoy it because it's natural to the soul. And the child is naturally, the Krishna consciousness revived in him. So we simply need to continue reviving Krishna consciousness in our youth, in our children, our grandchildren now. Some of us may be looking at great-grandchildren soon, you know, and bringing Krishna consciousness to our next generations and to the whole world. I just wanted to mention, finally, that we have our Krishna conscious devotees girl, Banna, Bhakti Banna Academy of North America, and it's helping to fulfill this vision. And we see the children all the time on festivals, on special days. They come in and they're chanting a bhajan, they're putting on a play, they're putting on different things like that. So it's a top-notch academic institution. It has some of the highest accreditations possible. And so the children are getting a very, very solid education, and at the same time, they're getting Krishna consciousness. So it's a very, very, very important. And I just want all the devotees to know that during this time of closure, all the schools are closed. Of course, our schools are also closed. But the administration, the teachers are working very hard to continue the education during the closure. And they have a whole program, a whole system of remote or distance education. I know my daughter is one of the teachers there, and they have meetings virtual meetings on the internet with the students, and they're talking to them and presenting classes to them. And the students are working on their own, they're sending in work and like that. So their educational program continues. And that's the nature of Krishna consciousness as well, that Krishna consciousness continues in any situation. We are so fortunate now to have this technology that our classes are being broadcast, chanting all over the world. You can get people chanting, you can get kirtan, you can get classes, you can get so many things. So, and of course we're able to, through our YouTube, be able to see the deities every single day on the altar. So everyone should continue their Krishna consciousness in that way. And we keep in mind these goals that Srila Prabhupada gave us of spiritual education and try to follow in those footsteps. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We may have a question.
We got first question. The verse mentions the impartial nature of the Vedantas and also the qualities of the boy. Which is more important for the transmission of transcendental knowledge?
That's a very good question. In other words, is it the quality of the hearer, or is it the quality of the sender, I guess, of the spiritual master, which is most important? Well, both are needed. Prabhupada said there needs to be a receptive, there needs to be a qualified speaker and a receptive listener. So both, and you could say both need to be there. Probably, I would say on a whole, that the quality of the guru, you might say, is more important, because Srila Prabhupada made so many devotees that weren't particularly qualified. None of us knew much, and especially all of us who were Americans, we didn't know who Krishna was, we didn't know philosophy, we didn't know Vedanta, or anything, And whatever we had read was probably wrong, or Mayavadi, or whatever. So the qualities of the pure devotee are probably able to overcome the deficiencies of the potential hearers. But at the same time, that has to be a little sincerity. In other words, so many people heard Prabhupada, not everyone became a devotee. And Prabhupada explained that Krishna's mercy is there for everyone, just like the rain comes and the rain goes on fertile soil, and the rain goes on rocks and on the ocean where it doesn't really do any good, but it's there for everyone. So in the same way, the mercy is there, but you have to take it up. You have to take it up. So it's a hard question. If I had to say one or the other, because both really need to be there. Interesting point. Thank you for that.
Second question. In the midst of a pandemic, how can we get others, friends or relatives, to understand or see that this crisis can also be for their best good?
How do we sort of reframe our thinking about this pandemic as being beneficial? Well, that's a hard one for non-devotees. It's even hard for devotees sometimes, because we know that Krishna is in control of everything. And I know about 3 weeks ago, Prabhupada gave a really nice class on that. How do we see everything as good that's coming from Krishna? Everything's Krishna's mercy. You know, so it is kind of a difficult question to see. But Krishna has a plan. And I guess that depends on some faith, that Krishna has a plan. And we don't know exactly what that plan is. Maybe people will become more serious. Maybe people will understand that their past, their previous life of just trying to enjoy is not really going to work. In other words, people's level of sense gratification is being curtailed. And so maybe they see that, you can't count on that. That is not what is going to give you happiness or pleasure. So people may become more serious and understand, well, what is the purpose? What should I be doing? And come more to spiritual life. And of course, there may be some other benefits, like, people aren't going out doing so much sinful activities. One thing they found is that the pollution levels in the river, and even in the Yamuna River, has gone down. The pollution in cities has gone down because there aren't so many cars being driven. Make it people to think about a lot of things that we do in our sort of frantic mode of passion life cause so many difficulties. And we can learn from these things. So I guess it comes down to is, let's try to learn the lessons here. What can we learn from this? Yes, it's a difficulty, and yes, we want to do whatever we can to prevent it. At the same time, what can we learn? Anything else?
Here mentioned about the qualification. You have explained about the Bhaktivedantas. How do you see with the present system we have in ISKCON, with the gurus?
How do we see it? I see that our present gurus are following the footsteps of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We have a Bhaktivedanta, our own Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and we are his followers. To the degree one is following, the degree one is qualified. That's qualification of spiritual master. Doesn't mean everyone's on the level of Prabhupada. Not everyone is Paramahamsa. Not everyone is Jagat Guru. But if one is following, if one is repeating, saying the same thing, in their own words, if one is saying what Prabhupada said, acting according to his instructions, then one is qualified. So, it says, we're called Rupanugas. Followers of Rupa Goswami. Are we all qualified as Rupa Goswami? Of course not. But we're followers. That's the point. We're Prabhupada Nugas. We're followers of Prabhupada. We're followers of the six Goswamis. We're followers of Narada Muni and our whole siblic succession. Is that it? Thank you very much. Thank you for our audience. I didn't realize we had people sending questions in. Are those coming in from the chat thing, or from the... Oh, very good. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.